This podcast is supported by The RealReal. Meet Christine. She loves shopping. And this is the sound of fashion overload. Too many fabulous things, not enough space. So Christine started selling with The RealReal.
I've always loved collecting designer pieces. Gucci bags, Prada heels. But my style keeps evolving. Selling with The RealReal? Game changer. I earn more and they do everything.
Seriously, just drop off your items or schedule a pickup. We handle the photos, descriptions, pricing, even shipping. You just sit back and watch your items sell fast to our 40 million members.
And I get peace of mind knowing I earn more selling with The RealReal than anywhere else.
Exactly. This? That's the sound of your closet working for you. The RealReal. Earn more, save time, sell fast. And right now, you can get an extra $100 to shop when you sell for the first time. Go to TheRealReal.com to get your extra $100. TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com.
Moncrief on News Talk. Parenting on Moncrief.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is time for parenting. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. If you have any questions for Joanna, afternoon@newstalk.com is the email address. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
First question is this. My 13-year-old son has ADHD and we think PDA, which apparently stands for pathological demand avoidance. You might have to explain that to us in a minute, Joanna. It was also suggested at his assessment that we have further testing done for autism. If we go privately again for further assessment, will all clinics or psychologists be able to diagnose PDA or is that more specialised? A recommendation would be brilliant if possible. Also, because of his conditions and behaviour, we give in to him an awful lot to keep the house calm for him, us and his sister. Is that the best way to deal with a PDA child? The more we ask him to do something, the less likely he is to do it. And if we prompt things, it can then sometimes end up aggressive, explosive, etc. Right.
Yeah, there is a lot. And PDA, pathological demand avoidance, often or maybe more recently referred to as pervasive demand for autonomy, which is a little bit of a more positive wording.
Positive, yes.
For essentially the same thing. I think when we're talking about demand avoidance in this context, you're not speaking about a child who's being obstreperous or choosing to be oppositional. I'm just not going to do that because you've asked me. This is much more in terms of a neurodivergence. It is an anxiety driven need to resist everyday demands.
Okay.
It's a very difficult thing for somebody to live with. And it's a very difficult thing for parents to parent around as well. Because what you're really talking about, Sean, is that somebody's nervous system perceives pressure as a danger signal. Mm. So then the nervous system reacts as you would expect a nervous system to react in the face of danger. Even though there is no actual danger there, the nervous system is understanding pressure, and pressure would be an everyday demand. You know, we got to do this and this. Come on, let's go and do it. Nervous system is like danger, 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 fight, flight responses react. So you tend, it's often dealt with by somebody in, that's why it gets its name, to avoid engaging with demand. So it is very complex.
Right. Okay. So if he's asked to do anything,
they may well have days where some things are fine one day and another day the very same thing isn't. And so it is a pervasive condition. So it is really, it's often shown as well. And I'm interested in this boy's journey through assessment. You know, he has an ADHD diagnosis. Now there's a query PDA and you've been advised to go for an autism assessment. PDA is often viewed through the lens of a profile within autism.
Okay. Yeah.
So that would make absolute sense to do that. But, you know, aside from understanding what it is, I would really want to start here. And if this parent is listening, I hope they are, with checking in on how they're doing. Because the parenting load is over and above. Even the second part of this question, look, we give in because we're trying to keep everyone else happy. Mm. We're thinking of our daughter and all of these things that a parent of a child with this profile is juggling and trying to be half a step ahead all the time. The pressure on parents is also massive. The parental burnout is a huge thing as well. And just parental exhaustion.
Yeah.
And that's no reflection on, of course, you love and enjoy your child. That's not it. But the parenting side of it can be all depleting. So parental self-care is not just a nice thing to do for yourself. It is essential for the parent, but also the child. Mm. That parents really do prioritize taking care of themselves, time out, whatever that looks like for individual parents, making sure that you get out together, be that for dinner, a walk or whatever, a drive and a bag of chips, whatever you can manage, that you do invest in that. In terms of, can I make a recommendation? I obviously can't do that on air because if I gave out a recommendation, that person's clinical referral system would collapse, you know, with people. Oh, they must be the person. And it very much depends on where you are in the country and all of those kinds of things. What I will do, though, is say that it is a clinical psychologist who would do this kind of assessment for you.
Okay.
And wait, I don't know if you're going public or private. Either way, you're looking at waiting lists of varying duration. So get on waiting lists as soon as you can. And while you're doing that, there are a couple of people who post regularly on social media that would have content that is helpful in this area. There is an occupational therapist who is somebody who specializes in AUDHD PDA. I got that out.
Right.
Profiles. You know, so exactly what this family are looking at. And her name is Circa Rice. And you would find her on Instagram, just Circa Rice OT. She's an occupational therapist. And she often posts content that is, you know, very, very helpful in terms of understanding and gaining insight. I know Caroline Foran, who also, you know, publishes books in anxiety and speaks professionally in that area, also posts as parenting with PDA and all of that as well. So you can find people who are posting online that just might, some of it will resonate with you and some of it won't, because your son is 13. He's not, you know, six or seven. So you might be looking at some of it and saying that's not for us, but within it you will find some nuggets. I would suggest that you start getting some information. So yes, you're asking, will everybody know how to diagnose PDA? If you're going to the right qualified person to do such an assessment, absolutely yes. But don't be afraid to ask that question at the point of referral.
Could the same person diagnose the autism if it's there and PDA?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. Right. And I would suggest that should be the same person.
Yeah.
So this young boy isn't having to see multiple people.
Yeah. But to deal with a child with PDA, how does one even go about doing that?
Well, I mean, you're looking at, you often, the way we would approach it is looking at parenting strategies and trying to affect change by working with parents, because it's an easier route for everybody involved. So you'd work at, you know, what kind of, the way, it's not that you, it's very difficult, Sean, to explain in a nugget, because it's not like you would avoid putting a demand or request on your child, because I think this is how it often gets misconstrued. Oh, if your child is demand avoidant, don't ask them to do anything. It's not. It's about your wording. It's really a language shift.
Yeah.
It's about how you frame things. Because he still has to function in the world, and the world, while it's improving in terms of understanding and accommodating for neurodivergent people, it's absolutely not there yet at all. So you're definitely going to need those therapeutic parenting strategies, is the best way I could put it. That's going to really work with you about how you approach demands. And just reading him, that doesn't mean that the whole family must now walk on eggshells around him, because I do sense that's what's going on. I'm slow to give direct recommendations to the second part of this question, because he hasn't got a diagnosis yet.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give you PDA strategies because if this child may not actually meet the criteria for that diagnosis, it may not be the appropriate diagnosis. But the person who does your assessment, make sure you don't just have an assessment and get a report, but work with them around what are the strategies that we should be looking at here that are in line with his development. So not just his chronological age, but his psychosocial, emotional development and where he's at, what's going to work for you as a family, and where should you get those supports? That's really important, that you're just not given a list of things to go source yourself, because it is very difficult and it can be isolating. So no, you will still be parenting him to function in the world, and you'll still have tasks that need to be done. It's how you're going to approach it.
Yeah, because I assume it's not just a language challenge for the family around him, but it's also equipping him to a degree when he goes out into the world.
No,
people
are going to
speak.
Essential. And I really do think children need to know their diagnoses. They need it, you know, and it's not about, oh, because some people are going to say, don't be labeling kids. It's not about that. It's not like this boy doesn't know he's having difficulties. Of course he does. But what he needs to know is that he's not the problem. You know, that actually there is a name for this, and this is why it's difficult, and it can really help, especially at his age, but I would say any child, it can really help them to understand how they're understanding the world and how they're being understood in the world. So it can alleviate that pressure for why is everything always so difficult for me? Because there is that understanding there. So I think it absolutely go down this route and get your assessment done, get the information and then sit and digest it. Make sure your son is part of the conversation. And then as a family, you're going to develop strategies. But they have a way to go on this yet. But he's 13. So also I always like to, you know, there is a developmental piece for adolescents as well. And again, the person assessing work through all of this.
Puberty as well.
You know, that's what I'm thinking as well, because, you know, teenagers are often oppositional in their stance in relation to parents and requests and demands, and they test limits and, you know, defy boundaries. All of those things are going on developmentally. But the clinical psychologist who's doing this will be able to filter through what is typical development and what is over and above and falls under the neurodivergent category. Yeah.
Someone texts in to say Lorraine Madden in the EPT clinic in Kilkenny is very good on PDA and all neurodivergent profiles.
Sure, if they're in Kilkenny or if they're prepared to travel there. But absolutely looking up anybody who, and many clinicians will post online.
Yeah, and Lorraine Madden does as well, apparently.
Brilliant,
turns out, yeah.
That's great. And I think the more names somebody has to look up what's being posted, just make sure the person posting is properly qualified to put up the post they're putting up.
Yes.
Because social media is definitely not checking that. So we do need to check it before we read somebody's content.
No,
make
you
sure
shocked
they're qualified.
Me with that revelation.
I fall off your chair with that. Yeah.
This question may be a little premature, but I want to get out ahead of it. I have a beautiful, cheeky and happy 17-month-old toddler who's full of the joys of life, but is prone to a tantrum or two if he doesn't get his own way. We've been living with my parents since July as we're renovating our house. My little boy has never wants for anything. He sees four adults at his beck and call. My toddler has two major life events coming up. Moving into our new house in mid-May, hopefully, and also the arrival of a sibling in mid-June. Do you have any advice as to hope and help him navigate both transitions? Your timing wasn't great there. I know there's a lot of time to go, but I would like to be prepared. Fortunately, our house is next door to my parents, so he will still continue to have a lot of contact with his grandparents. Any suggestions will be helpful, as dealing with a toddler and changes is all new to me. He'll be 21 months when the baby arrives. They're living next door, so that's a plus.
Actually, I was kind of going, oh my God, until you got to that bit.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, the prone to a tantrum or two, 17 months, absolutely, that's developmental. And it's due to children that age having a chronically low frustration threshold, high impulsivity and very little capacity for delayed gratification.
Okay,
so he sounds all of this. The bit that I think here, I mean, I kind of am going yikes for everybody with the moving and a month later, another baby arriving, even if that goes on schedule, which house developments are renowned not to. So that could all put that a bit tighter. This line, my little boy never wants for anything as he has four adults at his beck and call. Now, there's your problem.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah. He's the king.
It's not the new baby. It's not the house move. It's this. He is the king. And it takes children, you know, you often hear this phrase in the first few months of a child's life, his or her majesty, the baby, where they still think they're the world and the world is them. And it takes time for them to realize I'm not. It also takes them time because delayed gratification is so difficult for them. They don't do tolerance and patience very well at this age, typically. This kid never has to do it.
Yeah.
And now he's absolutely going to have to do it. So as the four adults in his life, you're going to have to support him in developing. Now, he's 17 months old. Even when the baby comes, he's going to be, you know, a few months older.
Yeah.
That's all. But you're going to have to support him with not just yet, very soon. Now I can help you.
Yeah.
You know, so even if that's only 90 seconds of a delay and then you build up from there, but just that he's not used to getting everything right now in the moment, because why would he change his expectation of that?
Yeah.
It's, you know, he's going to be like, this is utterly unreasonable. The thing is, because you're living next door to your parents, that is great for stability for him because they're very much part of his attachment network.
Mm.
They're not just you're living with grandparents for a period of time. They are a very important part of his life. So when the baby comes, if as much as they're available, and it sounds like they would be available and willing to take him out to keep his routine as stable and predictable as possible. Now, not to take him out and get rid of him so he's like, this baby came in and now I've been ousted next door.
Yeah.
But to just give that supportive piece for him, because he is so young. I think there is a book, it's really old, called There's a House Inside My Mommy or something about baby. I mean, it feels very appropriate here because there's both a house and a baby going on. But I would start integrating a few storybooks into his bedtime routine about a baby coming, because I'm sure you've told him, but that's utterly abstract for a toddler his age.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of the baby, I mean, for most of us, the idea of the baby versus the real baby is a big leap. He will, but he's not going to necessarily code that as, oh, what's going on here then? Yeah. Oh, wait a minute, Joy. You know, he's going to need to be told over and over, but bringing in some books and some play. Make sure you have a baby doll in his toy kit as well, and that it's one of those little baby dolls that has little nappies and, you know, what a little accessories with it, so that he can mirror and copy what you're doing, but manage expectations and give him time. I wouldn't panic if you saw some mild level regression initially, because his whole world is about to be rocked. He is the king. And now all those four adults at his beck and call are going to be taken up with a new baby. I do think it's worth reminding everyone, like when you go to see a new baby in a family, be it your friend or family member, it's really important to greet the other children first.
Yes, absolutely.
I really think, and that can get forgotten, you know, that to go to them and check in with them and be delighted to see them before you're delighted to see the baby.
Mm.
And even have a hold of the baby, but make sure your attention goes. It's also the best thing you can do for new parents is occupy the other children and help
absolutely.
With that. But, you know, make sure that he still has his moments of, yes, I'm special.
Yeah. Going back to the PDA, our middle child at age 12 to 13 was eventually diagnosed with similar nightmare time for us.
Yeah.
However, investment in private did eventually pay off in the end. He has turned out well, kind and considerate, but still challenging in the adult phrase. As parents, you need help for your sanity.
I could not echo that enough. Like, it's so important.
My sister and I each had baby boys within 6 months of each other. We were really happy that our firstborns would be best friends and would always have their cousin to play with, as we live quite near to each other. That was 9 years ago, and that dream has become something of a minor parenting nightmare. Myself and my husband have been very deliberate about our parenting, and we take discipline seriously. I don't think we're overbearing or anything. To us, we just feel like we set reasonable boundaries and we stick by them. This is not really the approach of my sister and her husband. I absolutely adore my sister. I feel a but coming here. there it is. But she is much more of a free spirit than I am, as is her husband. And that is reflected in their parenting style. The result is that her son is a bit of a terror. I love my nephew as well, of course, but he's a serious handful, and it's because he's never told no. It's obviously not my place to tell my sister how to raise her kids, and I fully subscribe to the idea that they can raise their child as they see fit. The problem is that my son, who's the younger of the two, idolizes his cousin, and when he comes back from playing with him, he's like a different child. He's running around, knocking things over, he's shouting, and most irritatingly of all, he says no to everything. How do I make it clear to my son that this behavior is not acceptable without harming his relationship with his cousin or mine with my sister and her husband?
I mean, you can, but it's not going to be in that sorts it out situation.
Yeah.
I suppose one of the things that jumps out is these two people are, I think they're sisters. They're very different, you know, but they get on. They got on well enough to be delighted to be pregnant together, to imagine that their sons would be best friends and to celebrate that. So just because these two boys are different and are being raised in very different parenting styles and homes, of course they can be friends. What's really the issue, and they sounds like they are and that they get on very well, the two kids, but it sounds here is that your son is coming home hyper-stimulated from being with his cousin, and a lack of no, which I'm interpreting as quite loose boundaries.
Yeah.
You know, if there are boundaries, they're loose and it's quite child-led and, you know, run amok and have fun and, you know, give everything a go. There's a lot of natural consequence stuff going on here. And that's absolutely fine if that works for one of the little boys. But your son is coming home seemingly hyper-stimulated because he's coming from that environment into a very different environment where his energy level is incongruent with the environment around him. So it's a problem because it's a problem is what I'm trying to say. Mm. You know, that if he was staying in his cousin's house, his hyperstimulation and high energy probably wouldn't be an issue. It's because he's coming home to a different energy level.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
your expectation then is that he comes in and he recalibrates and settles to the tempo and pace in your home and your boundaries and limit setting. What I'm saying to you is at 9 years old, he needs help with that.
Yeah.
So when he's been with his cousin and his aunt and uncles and he's been having a great time, when you're bringing him home, be mindful that you're bringing him home a bit revved up. And so what do you do with that? Have you set up when he comes in that you're not hitting him with a list of tasks and demands, but maybe, you know, come on outside and we're going to kick a ball around or use the trampoline, a little bit of burning off some of that energy, come in and give him a little task, you know, with you to help you work alongside me. We're going to do this and you're chatting to him. It could be just cooking the dinner or, you know, sorting out a box. It doesn't matter what it is, but he's doing a task alongside you and you're just co-regulating him. So when you want him to calm down, you're the calm through which he's calmed. But that means staying with him and just being around him and bringing him gradually down a bit. So not expecting him, hey, this isn't acceptable and you're not behaving the way we want you to behave, but saying, OK, you're a little bit overloaded. I need to bring you down. I need to reduce the heat of the situation. Mm. I'm the one who's going to set that. So and then beyond that, to avoid this whole comparison, oh, but I'm allowed to do it in my cousin's house and he's allowed to do it and I'm not. You're going to use in this house. In this house, we whatever. In yeah. this house, we do not. In this house, we do. And that is without judgment because you're not saying, well, I don't care what they do. That's not OK either. You're keeping it in this family, in this house, whatever the behavior is, and you don't make reference to your sister's parenting, either to her, about her, and don't even do it if you think nobody's listening because somebody is. And I just think remind yourself you're very different from your sister, and yet the two of you sound like you get on really well.
Yeah. I can't help but wonder, are there siblings there at all? Or are these two only child and two boys getting together go, yeah, let's go mad
now. That's
a
really good point. Yeah.
And they hype the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
So
and of course they would. 2 9-year-old boys racing around and having a great time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could be good for your son to see, you know, two different sides of things and to be able to explore all these other expressions too. So I don't think this is a bad thing. It's really about how you're bringing him back down when he comes in so that you're not seeing you're the problem. His behavior is the problem. It's more that he's a little overstimulated right now. And we've got to reduce the heat or the tempo just to bring him back down gradually.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.